are listening to Hit Play, Not Pause, a feisty menopause podcast for active, performance-minded women. I am your host, Celine Yeager. Each week, I bring you advice from athletes, scientists, researchers, and other experts to help you feel and perform your best, no matter what your hormones are doing. This show is a production of Live Feisty Media. Hello, strong, feisty women. I hope you all are well. So this week, we're bringing you a conversation with longtime endurance athlete and current pro bike racer, Sarah Max. Sarah is part of the Lifetime Grand Prix, which if you don't know what the Lifetime Grand Prix is, it is the premier bike race series in North America, and honestly, the biggest gravel mountain bike race series in the world. And if you don't know what gravel racing is, it is as it sounds. It's bike racing on gravel and or unpaved roads. The Lifetime series consists of 7 races and includes what is considered the Super Bowl of gravel racing, a super duper hard 200-mile gravel race in Kansas called Unbound. It also includes the legendary Leadville 100 mountain bike race, which takes place a lot of it over 10,000 feet of altitude. And it kicked off just this past weekend with the Sea Otter Classic mountain bike race, which is a 70-mile doozy. I've raced the course and it's hard. This episode was recorded before the event out in Sea Otter, so we don't know exactly how it went, but we will put a link in the show notes so you can follow along with Sarah's progress. Check it out. You'll note that she does mention in the conversation that she was not feeling maybe 100% on form for Sea Otter coming into this weekend. So no pressure, Sarah, but we are 100% cheering for you. Sarah is also 49 years old, which makes her the oldest athlete toeing the line in the series. She was also in the series last year, and she used to shy away from the conversation about her age because she didn't want it to define her and she didn't care for the attention it brought. But she's realized since that while her age isn't her brand per se, it is part of her story and an important part that inspires others and helps them see their own potential. And it most certainly does not get in her way. Sarah's professional cycling highlights include a 3rd-place finish at the 2019 edition of Unbound. She's had a few mishaps in the years that followed, but she's always in the mix. She was also 2nd in the notoriously competitive Belgium Waffle Ride in Southern California that same year, and then 6th in 2023. She's got a 4th-place at Steamboat Gravel in 2022 and finished 13th overall in the Lifetime Grand Prix Series last year. And one of the most impressive things, as if that wasn't all impressive enough, is that she also works full-time as the managing editor at Morgan Stanley Research, where she is part of a global team that helps the firm's economists and strategists and analysts share their research and ideas with investors, business leaders, and policymakers. Before that, she was a staff writer for Money Magazine and senior writer for CNN Money, among others. She's also a mom of twin daughters and lives in Bend, Oregon, so she has to commute sometimes to Times Square in New York City for her job, as well as commute and travel all over the country to get to these races that are never in easy places to get to, all while juggling everything else in her life. We talk about all of that, including where she is in her perimenopausal journey. As you'll hear, this is a bit of a 2-part episode. I first caught up with Sarah right at the end of last year's race season, and it was clear that she was probably a little wrung out and needed some downtime before giving her full focus to 2024. So I followed up with her this month to see how the winter had been and how she was feeling heading into the season opener. I really appreciated her candor in that conversation. I hope you enjoy this one as much as I did. Before we get to it, as always, give us a follow at Feisty Menopause on Instagram and Facebook. Come join our private Hit Play Not Pause Facebook group. Head on over to feistymenopause.com and sign up for my free weekly newsletter, which features research, training, badass athletes, and more. And thanks as always for your kind reviews. I appreciate you. Last thing, super quick, if you haven't checked out Prevenex's new Muscle Health Plus product, go on over to the show notes and check it out. I've been hearing from women who have avoided using creatine because it bothers their belly, and they are having no issues with this powder. Me neither. I use it daily. I love it. Thank you, Prevenex, for your support and your great products. All right, enough of me. Let's have a few words about our awesome sponsors and get on with the show. Musculoskeletal health is everything during menopause. Everyone knows how much I love Joint Health Plus from Prevenex, which has helped me get back to distance running after arthritic toes stopped me in my tracks. Now they have a product that has become my go-to for muscle strength and recovery, Muscle Health Plus. Muscle Health Plus contains all the key ingredients we talk about on this show, like creatine monohydrate, essential amino acids, and branched-chain amino acids, plus even more cutting-edge ingredients like HMB and estrogen that are scientifically shown to increase muscle growth, recovery, and strength. I use it every day during my early morning lifting sessions, and there's no question that it helps my power during those workouts and my recovery after. Plus, I love having everything I need from the best high-quality ingredients in one reasonably priced shake. I've also heard from fellow users who have had bloating or GI upset in the past from creatine that haven't had any of that with Muscle Health Plus. I make my shake with almond milk and espresso, but it's also good with ice cold water, which makes the flavor really pop. As always, you can get 15% off your first order with the code HIPPLAY, all caps, one word, at Prevenex.com. That's HIPPLAY, all caps, one word, at Prevenex.com. Do your muscles a favor and head on over and get some today. All right, Sarah, I am very excited to have you here. And before we even get to it, I want to say congrats on getting into the Lifetime Grand Prix again.
Thank you.
Very cool. It's very cool. So I love your story, especially as someone, though, like, never really took it to your level. I didn't start racing mountain bikes on a sort of semi-pro level myself until I was 40. You know, I was also a mom, and I was one of the very few moms. I don't know if that's changed. Weren't a whole lot of us in the field at all. Like, Rebecca would actually call me mama. She's like, hey, mom. You know, just like, and also I was a full-time writer. And so I'm like, I resonate a lot with your journey. And I wanted to talk a bit about how you got to where you are now in this gravel racing space, which, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to be like the most all in at a very high level you've been in a sport. I mean, I know you were a cross-country ski racer too, so I don't know how far you took that.
I would say, pretty serious about when I was cross-country ski racing. I was training with a group of people who were either on the U.S. ski team, just off the U.S. ski team. And I was, I would say, pretty focused, had a coach, structured workouts, 20 hour. Yeah, that was pretty serious, I would say. Yeah, yeah.
But then the gravel racing came in, even though you have done mountain biking and cyclocross and all of the things. Gravel racing is fairly new to you, correct?
Yes. I like sometimes joke that gravel was racing. Racing was made just for me. It's like the perfect jack of all trades kind of thing. I mean, just to kind of back it up a little bit, and maybe it helps for context. I have daughters who are now 21 years old, and I was, you know, I dabbled in a lot of different kinds of cycling. But where I was in my life with having young children, working, my cycling career, and I'd say my sports career in general, but definitely cycling kind of ebbed and flowed with where they were in their life. Mm. And, you know, before gravel, it wasn't really, if I wanted to race at a high level, I would have had to have joined a team and made a kind of commitment that I just wasn't willing to make. And so it's kind of funny how I came about getting into gravel. Just quickly, I'll tell you, I was training. I decided I was kind of bored, needed a challenge. So I signed up for the Breck Epic. And that same summer, a friend of mine said, hey, Rebecca Rush is doing this gravel camp. Would you want to, and this was, I think, 2018, let's just do it as a girls' weekend. And we just wanted to do it as an excuse to ride in cool places in Idaho. And I ended up meeting, you know, obviously Rebecca and Yuri Housewald, and realizing, you know, oh, this is kind of fun. I could do this, and signed up for I did RPI, the Queen Stage, that fall. Meanwhile, though, I was working as a journalist at the time. And even though my background is in financial journalism, whenever I had an opportunity to kind of cross over the financial and sports story, I would. And a PR agency I'd worked with on some other kind of quirky sports business stories pitched me a piece on gravel and how it's the new big sport. And they said, if you get into Unbound, it was then called Dirty Kanza, you know, we think you'll get in, you should do that race. Well, I got in and it scared me so much. I trained harder than I had trained in a while. I'd been like coasting for years on my old, you know, just leftover endurance. And I trained and I took it seriously and then ended up having a pretty amazing season in 2019. I was second at BWR in San Diego. I ended up third at Unbound that year. So it was kind of just a shock. And so that is how I came to start to enter the world of gravel. It was really because of an assignment.
So a couple things just to put finer points on some of this. How old were you at this time? How old are you then?
Oh my gosh. Let's see.
47? No,
40. I'm 48 now. Okay. And that would have been 4 years ago. So yeah, 44, I guess.
44.
Yeah, okay. 44.
And for those who don't know, like, what was it about Unbound then Dirty Kanza that was scary?
Riding my bike 200 miles in 12 hours straight. I had done a couple of half Ironman triathlons, and I had never done anything that long. I mean, I'm trying to think about what my longest race had been up until that point, but nothing even remotely like that, and certainly nothing on a bike. I did do the 3-day Breck Epic, which was, you know, fairly epic.
It's a mountain bike race. It's a bit different.
Yeah. But I'd never, I mean, to sit on a bike for 12 hours, I couldn't even fathom that. I couldn't even fathom finishing.
Yeah. I've done it twice. After the first time I said never again. And then
I say that every time.
They had that women's initiative. I'm like, just for you, Christy, I'll come back and do it. But did you love it? I mean, what was the experience?
Did I love it? Is it like, if they talk about type 2 fun, is this like type 20 fun? I mean, they're definitely, I've done it now 3 times and each has had its moments. It's very hard. I still feel like unfinished business because the first year I was winning, flatted, got third. The second time I did it, I was in third and with 30 miles to go, my shifting came impaired, got 10th or 11th. And then last year, also started out having a good race. And then I had issues with my bottom bracket, like plugging up basically around mile 80, and just finishing was, you know, rough. But, you know, I don't know, as the race itself, I'm not sure if I can, you know, with all due respect to Unbound, I don't know that the race itself is fun, but I really love the process of training. And I love the process of training for that one because it still is such a huge challenge. And there's so much to think about. You can always improve no matter what. So, yeah.
Do you tend to like the longer stuff? And, you know, we'll get into your training and what the Grand Prix looks like. But, I mean, Unbound at 200 miles is definitely a long outlier there, right? I mean, a lot of the other ones are right around that 100-mile-ish mark.
I would say, I don't love it.
Yeah, I understand.
I think I'm a little bit happier around the 5-hour range. I'd say that's a little bit more interesting to me. But, you know, I like variety, and something I will say that's been kind of true throughout the different sports I've done is that I do get bored easily. So I do like variety. And if I come to a point in a sport or in a race where I feel like there's nothing else I can do to improve, then I'm kind of done with it. It's a very personal thing for me usually.
Is that what attracted you to the Grand Prix? Like, tell us a little bit about, like, for those who don't know, describe the Grand Prix. And like, I don't actually know this either, though I've listened to a lot of, like, I listened to your show when you talked to Payson McKelvin, and I've read about you, but I don't know how you actually found yourself in there. And I imagine it maybe just was this challenge with a bunch of variety.
So yeah, I'll back up. You know, one thing I want to say that maybe is something that is important to know, and maybe for your audience, is that I have had so many different chapters in sport. I've had so many points where I've done something, I've retired from it, or just moved on. And then for whatever reason, something will happen that will trigger like another, I'll just be like, all right, I'm going to do it. And you know, this happened. I was a runner, and then I dabbled in triathlons, and then I had Nordic skiing. It was very like I was looking for a new challenge and right place, right time, similar with gravel. And then after that 2019 season, we had COVID, and 2020 was a bust. 2021 was a bust for me personally because my daughters were had, you know, they were supposed to go to college in the fall of 2020, and their worlds were just kind of, you know, destroyed. Quite
I have a
frankly, it was
daughter of
really
the same
tough.
age.
My focus was on my family. I did not have the brain. I did not want to be even gone for them for 3 hours, let alone try to race a bike. I did a couple races and they were not, I was mediocre. And then just on a whim, so when the Grand Prix was first announced, I'll say, I looked at that and I thought, wow, that's really interesting. That sounds horrible. That sounds really hard and good for those, you know, I knew a lot of the women doing it. Good for them. This is perfect for them. I had no interest. But around that time, I just kind of put it out there to someone I work with at our the someone at Argonaut who is not a coach by profession, but had been a professional racer, just kind of casually said, "Would you train me?" Thinking he might just like give me like a basic plan, thinking I might try to do, you know, a couple races again. And he really kind of went all in terms of just he was excited about the opportunity, and he did not look at me saying, "You're a 40-year-old woman, I'm this is how I'm going to train you." He really did kind of train me that I joke like I was a 20-year-old man. And I ended up in that season having great results, doing a lot of the races that were in the Grand Prix. So then when the application came around for 2023, I thought, I want this challenge. I actually, it was the challenge, and I was interested in that. And you know, there were races on that calendar like the Leadville 100 I hadn't done, I was very interested in. And that's kind of how that came about. And so I decided to do it.
So your first year was this year?
Yeah,
Okay.
2023. So
Okay.
the first year of the Grand Prix, and just to give your audience, it's a series of races. In 2023, it was seven races, three of which were mountain bike races, four were gravel races. Most, you know, very much distance focused. The shortest race is the Shawamigan race that I think, you know, it's roughly 2.5 hours. That is the shortest race by far. It is, you know, it's challenging. The first race is in mid-April and the last race is near the end of October. It's a very long season. And in addition to doing, you know, the races in the series, a lot of us are doing other races as well. So yeah, so it's a lot. It
Yeah, you do a
was a
lot, and I have
challenge.
questions about that later, about like what that actually looks like, because I know you went,
Yeah.
you went and did BWR, you did the Oregon stage race. I mean, you've been putting a lot in there, as well as this Grand Prix, which is very challenging. I have a couple of questions just to, again, follow up. Like, when you say that your coach was training you like a 20-year-old male, quote unquote, like what do you mean by that?
I was moto pacing, for example. I was, you know, a typical way that I would work out would be if I'm, and I still do this to the, for, you know, the most part, you warm up, then you go do your like hard efforts, you cool down. Well, I would do what I joke is the dad hour power, which is a lunch ride with some very fit, busy dads who don't have time for warm-ups. And we just go out of the gate so hard. Well, that became one of the best workouts for me because a gravel race, especially if you're mixed in with men, you go out really hard. You don't warm up. And if you want to be successful in those races, you need to make those early breaks with men. And so I would go like I would have no warm up. It sounds horrible. This some of it goes like flies in the face of like science, sports science, but I would have no warm up. I would go out with these guys. Their intention often was, I don't want to say to drop me, but to like make sure
Drop
that I,
everybody.
yeah, well, I mean, they would actually do, it was a small group and they would, the workout was designed around me, basically me trying to hang on to their wheels. And if I fell off, they would slow down and let me get back on. But that was, they were just trying to drop me. And then I would go ride some more. And so I had like some really Pivotal workouts where, I mean, I've never done an 8-hour training day. I mean, I had like a day where my coach said, go ride for 8 hours. In the middle of that, I moto paced. So, I mean, there were some hard things. And that's why I kind of say, he kind of trained me like a 20-year-old man. I don't, that may not be fair, but he didn't think he would tell me to do things that I actually at first thought would be impossible. And then I would go do them. And I would realize like I could do it. Or power, like to say, go hold. I mean, threshold power, my threshold power is around 270 watts. And to go hold that for a certain amount of time, I just feel like there's no way I can do it. And I would do it. And quite honestly, right there, that to me means more than being able to do these things that you think are impossible. That is more important to me than any kind of podium win, how I finish. That is why I'm doing this. I'm not do I would rather get whatever last in a race where I am proud of my performance than win a race that was just too easy and I didn't really feel like it was that great of a performance. So anyway.
And he wouldn't have you doing that if it wasn't, if you weren't responding to it, and if you,
Correct. And then
right, yeah.
this is a very important thing to say because he was just coaching me. It's not like he really had the time to kind of look at the data, and he had, I mean, a very good way of seeing if I was getting tired, if I wasn't responding. And so the reason it worked, and I do think you're right, it's important to preface. I wasn't just going out blindly doing these silly things. They weren't silly, but blindly doing these hard things. He was watching very closely to see what that looked like and making sure that I felt okay, that I was recovering. So that was a huge part of it for sure.
Yeah, and to be clear, like as you mentioned, all of the things that he had you doing are like talk about specificity. I mean, I've been in those races, like because they start at like 5:50 in the morning sometimes, like you don't have time to get
No.
up and eat and warm up. I mean, it's all you can do to get yourself to the start line. And they start like mountain bike races with a hole shot. I'm like, you know, we
Yeah.
have 200 miles here. It's just like it's so fast.
Oh my
And you
gosh,
have to hold
yes.
it. Yeah. So, I mean, that is very specific to what you need to do to be successful in those situations.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting because you also didn't have any former you to compare yourself to in this exact situation, correct?
Yes. And it was actually, I think my daughters are great bodies of knowledge for all kinds of things. And one of them said, it's really bad to compare yourself to others. It's even worse to compare yourself to your past self. That's a very, I think anyone can relate to that. We
She's
have all these,
21.
yes, 21. We have the Strava, we have all these things, all these data points, and it's so dangerous. So I feel lucky because I went into the sport with no expectations. And that is, again, you don't know, oh, that's so and so, and she's so good. I mean, I don't even know who anybody was. I would always joke, like, I don't have my player cards. I don't have my like cycling player cards up to date. And wow, like if I could like really hope for anything in the next season, it's like, can I let go of these preconceived ideas of who I am and who my competitors are and just go out there and race? Yeah. And so I do feel lucky that I think, if you ask the question of like, do I feel different at age 48 and do I feel like the effects of getting older? It's hard to answer that because I don't have a baseline for what I'm doing right now. And I guess I feel kind of lucky in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I do want to get into that and dig a little deeper there, maybe dig a lot deeper there. Before we go there, how did this year's Grand Prix go for you? I think you ended up 13th, is that correct? At some point you were in fourth, I think.
Yes.
I was trying to follow along, and it's you talk about the training and the racing, but to my mind, a lot of what's hardest about those events is all of the rest of it. It's the travel, it's the logistics, it's just trying to get yourself to the start line, especially when you've got all those events all over the country and very hard places to get to.
Yes. Let's see. I 100% the logistics can be very difficult. And because I love my setup racing for Argonaut. They're based in Bend. They, you know, not only do I get to do the dad hour power workouts with them, but they take care of like all of my, like any kind of like maintenance on my bike, all of those things. But because I am more of just like a smaller team, I don't have, you know, someone always like booking the housing, the team mechanic, the team support. And I did get I ended up like getting pretty lucky with all of the situations that I had this year, but it's not easy. That can be very stressful. Just piecing together all the logistics for sure. That's a big part of it. So you were asking about the logistics of it. And
just like how did it go
for
like,
me?
Yeah.
You know, I would say it was a little bit of a mixed bag. Even though I have done mountain bike races, I am not a mountain biker of the same caliber that a lot of the women are in the Grand Prix. I mean, and that's something I tried to like take comfort in, is like looking at some of their resumes. I mean, there are women in the Grand Prix who were World Cup mountain bikers, Olympic mountain bikers. And so that was definitely a challenge. The first race was Sea Otter. I've never been to Sea Otter. You know, this mountain bike race with a very, very fast start and a hole shot. And you know what? I actually did better than expected, but it wasn't like awesome. And then Unbound, I started off, even though it was challenging. We all, you know, ran into that mud 10 miles in and had to walk our bikes. I actually kind of loved it. Just made it spicy. And like I decided just to keep, you know, just kind of laugh about it, keep some perspective. And I was in the top five going into mile 80. And then I, you know, ended up 11th, which is actually not that bad, but I was a little disappointed. I kind of had like, it was a mixed bag, you know. Leadville, I think there's a lot of room for improvement in Leadville. I did not acclimate. And the reason I didn't acclimate, and here's where maybe not so much my age, but my life stage is an issue, is, you know, that was 1 week that my daughters were home from college and internships and all of that stuff. And I wanted to be with them. I didn't want to be at 8,000 feet or wherever I needed to be in Colorado. So I chose to be with them. So I didn't go acclimate. I didn't pre-ride the course. I didn't know what to expect. And that's where that race was hard, but I do feel like, oh, there's a lot of room for improvement there. Yeah, I would say, like, you know, all in all, don't need to go through every single race. There were some good races. There were some races where it's like, oh, that's bad luck. You know, like going on the way to Big Sugar, I realized at, you know, the Denver airport in between planes that I was getting a UTI. So, boy, that was not fun. Let me tell you, a UTI on rough gravel, that was special. So yeah, you know, but when you do that many races, there's just going to be good luck and bad luck, and everybody's in the same boat. Everyone, even the best, you know, even the best of the bunch, everyone's going to have some bad luck.
As a lifelong runner and cyclist, I am stoked to announce that Tifosi Optics has come on as a podcast sponsor. The beauty of Tifosi sports glasses is that they hit all the marks. They are shatterproof polycarbonate, so the lenses not only reduce glare, but also offer scratch resistance and complete eye protection. They stay put. They have little hydrophilic rubber nose pads that actually get more grippy the more you sweat, so they stay secure and don't slide down your face even when you're running in sauna-like conditions. No matter what sport you do, they have a shade for your activity, including tennis, fishing, pickleball, running, cycling, and just hanging out at the beach. And they are super reasonably well-priced, which is very hard to find in a sea of overpriced eyewear. And they just look freaking rad. So head on over to TifosiOptics.com and use the code FM, capital F, and capital M, like feisty menopause, number 20, FM20, to get 20% off your order today. I'll put a clickable link in the show notes to make it a snap. Good sleep. The one thing that sets you up for a great workout and a good day is quality sleep. We talk about it all the time here on the show, which is why I'm stoked to have Lagoon Sleep as a new sponsor. Because one of the most overlooked tools in a great sleep toolbox is the thing you literally rest your head on 8 hours a night, your pillow. A quality pillow is everything. Otherwise, you end up tossing, turning, punching, and folding your pillow, waking up with neck pain, and all the stuff that happens when your pillow doesn't meet your personal comfort needs. Say hello to the most comfortable sleep you've ever had with Lagoon. They start you out with a 2-minute personalized pillow quiz and then pair you with your perfect pillow. I got the Otter, a cooling adjustable pillow that is perfect for side sleepers who run warm at night like I do. It is a dream. It's fully adjustable, so I was able to get the perfect loft and support, and the cooling feature is everything. As someone who turned into a furnace every evening before menopause, I appreciate that the Otter is stuffed with shredded gel-infused memory foam, which instead of trapping heat from my neck and head, draws it away and dissipates it. It's truly delightful. I'm a good sleeper, and Otter's taken it to the next level with both support and cooling. Put my head down, good night, Irene. My Oura Ring confirms what little tossing and turning I was doing is gone. The beauty of the pillow quiz is you can get the perfect pillow that you need to and make your sleep the best sleep you can have. Go to lagoonsleep.com/hitplay and take the 2-minute quiz to find your perfect match, and then use the code HITPLAY, all caps one word, for 15% off your first purchase. Sweet dreams. So you signed up and you got in again. And is that because of this like learning process and that you like to see how far you can go with things and continue to evolve?
Yes. I felt very unsatisfied. I mean, I really did want to get top 10 just symbolically. And it, you know, it was close, actually. It was not like out of the question. And yeah, at one point I was fourth. I think that was a little bit of like, you know, the, just because of the early results, people had races that they didn't finish or dropped or whatever. But you know, it was in range. I think the challenge next year, though, is thinking about, you know, not is keeping my expectations still focused on the things I can control. And what I can control are these things about my training and about whatever mindset or whatever, you know, these skill things. The field is even more competitive next year. It's even, I mean, so top 10 would be, you know, I don't know if I can do it, but yeah, I just feel like there are some things that I can do. And I don't know that I'm ever going to finish a series or a race season and be like, wow, everything worked out perfectly. But yeah, I think I'm going to give it one more try. That said, I mean, I literally 2 days ago just got home from a trip that started with the end of the Grand Prix. So just, I cannot fathom right now training that hard and racing my butt that hard.
You have some time. You have some time yeah. To take a breath.
Yeah.
Let your butt, let it all sink in, as they say. You know, I wanted to, you know, full disclosure for the audience, you know, when I was talking about to you about coming on the show, one of the questions, because of the nature of the show I had, is like, have you hit any hormonal challenges? You know, where are you in this whole process? And, you know, like your replies back to me made it sound like maybe not, you know, like, you know, your recovery, you feel kind of the same, your training, all of that, which, you know, this is huge spectrum. And I always say, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's not an age thing. It's sort of like a hormonal thing, and everybody hits that differently. So who knows? Yeah. But, you know, I do want to hear, like, have you felt, you know, do you have any issues that you would relate to hormones, or do you think that you're still just where you are?
I do have issues. Actually, you know, I meant at the end of 2019, in 2020, I found that I was feeling really not good. It was weird because it was kind of COVID. I was like, God, I'm tired of taking some naps a lot. And then I went on a ride with a friend, and I had a moment where I almost felt like I was having an out of body experience. I said to her, I need to stop for a second. I need to eat some sugar. I don't know what's wrong with me. And I went and got everything tested, and my thyroid results came back, and I had zero. Well, the test came back. I had zero testosterone. And I know I should, I'm, by the way, I can talk about financial terms all day long, but I have a major blind spot for anything medical.
That's fine.
I have no vocabulary for it, but payback. And basically my thyroid was out of whack, and I needed to go. I had to go on thyroid medication, just a very light dose to kind of like, you know, get things back and get my testosterone back to like a normal level. And now everything is good. You know, I definitely do have low estrogen. I do have, you know, the markings of someone who is perimenopausal. I have an IUD, so it's very hard to know exactly like, oh, where am I? But I do kind of have, I know I'm having menstrual cycles, just based on, and I try to track them. And they are still pretty regular, based on just like some of the, you know, the other fun symptoms of having a period. But of course, you know, there are things I recognize as aging. Do I hot flashes? You know, what's funny is that there've been a couple of times where I've had like those, like the night sweats, but you know what? A lot of women and men too, who are training really hard, get night sweats. And I have heard more of my 20 and 30 year old friends talk about soaking sheets than I've heard my, you know, older 50 something year old friends talking about soaking sheets. So again, it's hard to know sometimes, like,
totally.
How is this a response to training versus my hormones?
That was my thing. I, not to interrupt, but like that, I didn't recognize. And because I would do the same thing. I would furnace sometimes, but when I actually started getting those night sweats, it was different. Like I had never, like I would wake up with a panic attack and be soaked. Like it was very, you know, and it was very different. But I know exactly what you're saying. Like I know guys who also soak sheets during hard training blocks.
I mean, of course, it's sometimes I think hard. Of course, I know that I've aged, and you know, there've been times when I thought, God, what would my 20-year-old body, how would it respond to this kind of training? Like, what would that look like? Wow, that could be really cool. My coach has lamented sometimes, like, damn, you know, like, if only you'd done this, and you, like, not so many terms, but, you know, of course I'm curious about that stuff, but it's just, I think it's hard to know sometimes, like, what is, like, the, you know, what is just the, this menopausal journey versus what is just the life journey, for good, for better, for worse, quite honestly, because there are things that, you know, when my children were home, I was working as a financial journalist and I was doing these sports. I mean, I had not a second of free time. I was going constantly. And, you know, now I have more time, more downtime. I have more time to rest. I sleep better. I recover better. And so I have those things going in my favor, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, have you changed anything? I mean, you're so new in this journey, you probably haven't changed anything in your training. I'm curious what your training besides like that, the cycling training that you're talking about, do you do strength training? Have you looked at any of that kind of stuff? Is that in part of your program?
So I've never, and going back to my 21-year-old daughters, who are both athletes, and they are like, you know, they're so good at all of these things. They read Roar, by the way, and like, they literally, I think, I could probably go get the, there's like post-its on every page. And they like tell me how I have to eat more protein and lift heavy things. And so I have in the past, like done some like more traditional strength training around this time of year. And that is one of the things that last year I wasn't as diligent as I think I could be. And that's one of my things that I can improve this year. After the end of this race season, I wrote things that went well, things that didn't go well, and the things I'm going to change. And one of the things I want to be really intentional about is lifting heavy weights. And I'm doing my first strength session on Wednesday with a friend. I might only do like once a week, like of actual, like the heavy stuff where I'm in the gym. And then I do, so on my own, kind of core and PT. I was not diligent about PT, and that actually kind of bit me at Unbound when I had that bottom bracket issue. I realized like my back went out of whack, and it turned out I had some like my SI joint was like half an inch different on each side. It was awful. And so one of my other things that I'm going to do differently is be proactive about PT and actually see my PT before things start to hurt and just go in and get some, you know, have her kind of check in on me. Nutrition. I do not watch what I eat. I hate to say, but people always think that I must have like some really specific diet. I'm generally a healthy eater, but I just, you know, I'm not super intentional about how I eat, but I have thought about, at least when I start to get into like the heavy training and racing, seeing where I can fine tune that. I think as much as I try not to think so much about like having an expiration date on racing at this level because of my age, like I am aware that I don't even want to say the clock is ticking, but at a certain level, and if I'm going to race at the level I'm racing at next year, I have to do all those things. If I'm going to put in the amount of time on a bike, 20 hours a week on average of training, why wouldn't I spend like another little, you know, few hours a week doing strength and PT and yoga and eating well. So yeah. So we'll see how it goes. You can hold me accountable.
I love all of that. Do you work with a nutrition person at all? Are you just, I mean, I'm the same way. People think I must try. I don't really track anything I eat. Now I eat more protein forward and I was not eating enough carbohydrates. So it was really becoming a problem for me. Mm-hmm. And I have like introduced more of that and it's really changed a lot of things for the better for me. But I'm wondering if you like, if you have any analysis going on there at all. Yeah.
No, I have not. I have worked. So, Alan Lim at Scratch, helped me come up with, my nutrition for racing, and knock on wood, I have, I hate to say this because I feel like I'm going to jinx myself, but I generally don't have stomach issues when I'm racing. And he did really dial in like drinking my carbs when I race. Cause it's not so much, I have stomach issues. I have palate issues. I just can't, you know, everybody, when you're eating goose for that long. So I would say that one of the things that went well this year was race nutrition at Unbound. I just had carbo mix in my packs, and I think I might have eaten a little bit of other stuff, but he told me if all you do is drink this, that will be you are good. Everything else is bonus. So race nutrition, I have had help, but I do think there's some things that I could do outside of that. And you know, I don't want to live like that right now. It's, you know, we're talking right now in mid-November and I'm just going to do what I've always done. But when things start to get real, yeah, I think it would be good to dial it in a little bit. Might be, you know, a good experiment.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds the in competition stuff is often the hardest, really, is trying mm-hmm. not to have your gut shut down and all of that stuff. And that is such an individual process. So I think working with someone like Alan is money. You know, that's really, and it's great that it's, you're fine. I don't believe that. You haven't jinxed yourself at all. You just have that part figured out.
where age can be helpful, right? All these years. And it's not like I just started endurance sports. I've been an endurance athlete for a long time. So maybe where like the advantage is kind of like, maybe my stomach, my gut has gotten used to all that.
Yeah, mine never did. That has always been my hardest part, but everybody's got their thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about, because I know, you know, when you were on Payson's Adventure Stash podcast, and before we hit record, you talked about it too, like that you weren't always so keen about talking about your age and being the oldest person in the Grand Prix, and you are. Why did you not want to talk about it, and why are you more open about it now?
You know, initially it was because, so common, all of us suffer, I mean, not all of us, but so many of us suffer from imposter syndrome. Mm. And, you know, being a 40 something year old woman racing bikes, I just didn't want it to be like, my other daughter said, Mom, doesn't have to be your brand, but it is part of your story. And I just didn't want to be defined by that. And I wanted to also, you know, I just don't want to be like the token old lady or something in the Grand Prix. I wanted to be taken seriously as an athlete. And so I think that's maybe why initially I didn't love it. And there were a couple of situations where, like, in the interview, it was just always the lead. It was the
Right.
headline, it was the lead. And I didn't want that always. But then I kind of realized that after talking to some people, women who are our age or younger women who said like they were inspired by it. And I decided, you know what? Like, if me talking openly about my age, which everybody can see anyway on every single race result, like if that can inspire other people or help other people, then great. Then why not? It is part of what's happening. So yeah.
No, I understand that and I fully respect it. And I feel like we've gotten in a way better place societally, even women. Like you look at like Leah Goldstein, like winning Race Across America at, what she was like 52. I mean, you're seeing just like across genders and sexes and everything, like people are just being competitive longer, period. And women have that endurance thing where I think that they do get better. It's like the we just have that piece that I think we can stay in endurance sports longer. You see a lot of these women outright winning, in the ultra running space particularly. So, but I do feel like when I know when I would be asked those questions, I would feel suddenly I'd feel self-conscious and I didn't like that. It sounds like maybe there was a bit of that going on for yourself, but if I'm hearing you right, you've gotten past that place.
I have, but I think maybe it's because, I mean, of course, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say, if I look in the mirror sometimes and see a new wrinkle and think like, oh God, this sucks. Of course, aging is not all fun, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things that I really try to remind myself, a lesson is like, I remember, so I was 27 when I had my daughters. And I remember thinking when I was about to turn 30, oh my God, I'm old, And I look back and regret that so much. And I remember thinking like, oh, I don't know if I can I do these things. And then I remember when I so I was pretty serious about, actually, it was after I had my daughters. I did end up becoming pretty serious about Nordic skiing, and having those opportunities. But I remember saying to one of my friends who's the same age, gosh, if God help me, if I'm 35 years old, still like lining up, pull me off the start line. That seems so young now. And same thing, like we can look at every one of these milestones. When I'm 60, I'm gonna look back now and think like, oh, I was still such a baby, and look at what I could do. And so I guess like, what I've decided is to try to just be comfortable with where I am and be comfortable with it both for myself, but also, externally when I talk to people, and just not, I'm just gonna own it.
I love that and I appreciate it and it does help people. It 100%, you have no idea how many people you're moving with that and how many people are going to remember those words and it's going to propel them to live differently. And that change, that's how you change things. Like that's how change actually happens. So I really appreciate that and I so relate to that. I had many feelings. I'd be in my 40s and I'd be like, should I still be doing this? Like doing these stage races, but I felt great. And I was like, okay, like I don't know how long and I don't really care. And I'm always really clear to like, and I just had a post about that this week. Like, we don't know where our ceilings are. We're the first generation of women to be so athletic throughout our whole lives, And I always want people, that's why I started the show. Was so people would understand because aging is a gradual process. And when you hit sort of a menopausal or a hormonal thing, it usually happens pretty quickly, right? So if all of a sudden you're just like, what just happened? Think hormones, don't think I'm just old because those things are, you can do things to work with your changing hormonal physiology and keep going. I mean, like there's a whole generation of women doing that. So like, who knows what the potential is there? But like the aging piece is a much more gradual game, and even that is not as profound as we once believed because all those studies were done on sedentary people.
I mean, and you've written about this. There's so little that's been done on female athletes, period. Let alone on older female athletes. My mom tells me, Sarah, when I was in college, for my PE credit, I could choose between badminton and tap dancing. Those were her options.
What did she choose? I have to know.
Tap dancing.
Good choice.
So, no, I mean, it's insane. It's so different. And then look at, again, it is like kind of nice to have my daughters who are athletes also, like, you know, we can reflect on, like, I'm looking at what they're doing and what they're talking about. I mean, it wasn't even on my radar. Some of it still is even on my radar. So yeah. It's definitely, I agree. We have no idea.
They sound so wise beyond their years.
Sometimes, yes.
Well, I understand that too. I have a 21-year-old, and yes.
Yeah. No.
And sometimes it's not great at all. Did you ever, I'm guessing the answer is no. Did you ever consider just going all in, even for a year, you know, on without the other job stuff? Or do you like that balance?
Oh, you know, I've ever considered it. I did have, so with skiing, I did actually have a period where I started freelancing, and I was in kind of a sweet spot with like where my kids were, where my work was, that I wouldn't say I was all in, but I could be a little more focused on the sports stuff. I guess I've never considered it because I've kind of always been the primary breadwinner. I haven't had a choice. And if I had a choice, would I want to go all in? Honestly, I don't know that I would. And the other thing people think, oh, and you have a real job and nobody, you know, but first of all, I think the women on the Grand Prix who don't have other, like, quote unquote, real jobs, they have to work really hard to keep their sponsors happy because that's how they're paying their mortgage. And I don't, you know, yes, I have sponsors, but it's set up in a way that I am not, you know, I don't have to be posting on Instagram nonstop. So I don't want to say it takes the pressure off because that can be a very, it can be a little bit like, you don't necessarily want to get in a race. And I have been there where you think, well, it's more important to her because she needs this win because otherwise she will not be able to pay her mortgage. I have thought that. But I try not to do that because then you realize like, no, Sarah, you sacrificed too. You woke up at 5 o'clock this morning. You were, you know, doing things to get this done. This is important to you too. Don't go there. But that said, it is kind of nice that the two are so different, so very different. I do feel kind of lucky that way, actually. And I'm lucky because in the work I have, the way that it's set up, it actually is somewhat conducive to training because I work East Coast hours primarily. So I can train in the afternoon, but there are times where if I want to train in the morning, there's usually some flexibility that I can make it work. So, yeah.
Yeah. Because you're in Oregon and the offices are obviously in New York since.
Yes. And I work a lot of people in London too. So even.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so. No, that you definitely made it work for you, and it's exciting to watch. I wish you a lot of luck in the 2024 season. It'll be like you said, the field just keeps getting more stacked, so it's just it's pretty amazing to watch this thing unfold in real time. Is there anything that we haven't? I feel like this has been wonderful and illuminating. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you had thought about expressing about any of this?
You know, I think maybe I touched on it, but one of the things I go back and think about is just like the stories we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it really just, I know that everybody has kind of a different journey with like our aging and our hormones, you know, and you're right, they are different things because it's not just about what the change is happening in with our hormones. With aging comes other stuff too, for better or for worse. you know, caring for a sick parent or aging parent, where our children are, where whatever, there's all of that stuff is constantly changing. But I really like sometimes cringe when I hear people refer to themselves as old people and do it in a way like kind of constantly. Like I'll joke, like I joke that I like the, I think I said something about the AARP candidate for life, you know, like I'll make jokes sometimes. But I really just, if I were to say anything to other people, other women listening to this, you know, just like, stop doing that. Stop thinking of yourself as old because it's so relative. It's just all relative. And when you're 80 years old, you're going to think 60 was really young. And at 60, 48 seems really, whatever. It's all relative. And I was also, one of the things I was thinking about is just the value of having friends of different ages. And I have a lot of female friends who I really look up to and admire in their 60s. And I can look at them as like role models for that, you know, wherever that part of life might look like. But I also have a lot of friends in my 20s or who are in their 20s, not my 20s, I wish, who are in their 20s. And it brings so much to the table. So I don't know. I think we can't necessarily change what's happening with our bodies. I mean, maybe we can control some of it or make some things better, but we can certainly change our mindset. And that's really like the big thing I would want to leave with people and with myself.
I 100% agree with all of that. It's so important. And I also really cringe with that narrative. I think there's that, you know, it's fine to be light. It's fine to be breezy about some things and to make jokes, but you do really need to be careful with your language, because if you do consider yourself like old and you use old in your mind as a way of diminishing yourself, then that's not okay, you know, because like go just full circle in the conversation, we don't know like what does old even mean, you know, like it's like, to your point, it's all relative. And at some point, sure, maybe, you know, we don't all get faster till we like go off into the next adventure, but don't put on self-imposed limitations, you know, is definitely what I'm hearing from you.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. And I wish you all the luck in the Grand Prix. We'll be cheering for you.
Thank you. This has been fun. Check back with me about my weightlifting.
Okay, I definitely will. We'll keep you accountable. For decades, running shoes have been researched, tested, and designed for men. Brands have relied on the shrink it and pink it approach to sell male shoes to female customers. That's why we are stoked to be working with Hedas. Hedas designs athletic footwear for women that elevates performance, safety, and style. Hedas has unlocked the science behind women's biomechanics through dedicated research and creates better shoes for women's performance. Some of Hedas' special features include a lower ankle collar to reduce rubbing on women's ankle bones, a breathable mesh toe box to allow for ventilation and accommodate female toe shape, a more narrow and reductive heel cup to reduce heel slippage and take pressure off the Achilles, a rounded instep that creates a snug fit through the middle to match the curvature of a woman's foot, and supercritical foam and a PBEX plate in the midsole to keep our legs going when the going gets tough. Hedas has three shoe models designed for different sessions: the Alma Cruise for your long runs, the Alma Tempo for training days, and the Alma Speed for pushing the pace. I've been running in the Alma Tempos, and they are a pleasure to train in. You can get your own pair of Hedas at Hedas.com and use the code FEISTY20, that's all caps, FEISTY20, for 20% off. Check it out today. We'll put a clickable link in the show notes to make it a snap. Okay, Sarah, welcome back.
Thank you.
It was, you know, I thought it would be fun to catch up with you again, because last I left you, it was, you know, you were clearly in the, I have just entered off season from a very long season, because the Grand Prix is super long, right? It goes from like early April till the end of October.
Yeah.
And it doesn't leave much oxygen all the way through. So I thought, you know, you were making some notes about things that were going well and what you're working on. And I thought it's going to be, you know, Sea Otter is now right here. And again, so I thought, why don't I see how things have been going for you? I see you've been skiing and climbing volcanoes. So like, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. As you know, right now I'm actually in Princeton visiting my daughters. Kind of, you know, apropos to maybe some of what we talked about earlier, just balancing everything. Work that's based in New York, plus my kids are out here, so made a last minute trip on a couple days ago to come here. It was kind of a tough trip, and tough flights and everything, and I'm here. I guess I'm doing okay. I look back at that conversation you talk about how I was in, you know, the off season, and I really did not follow a very, I'm still not on a training program, if we're honest, actually. I did not follow much of a rigid training program over the winter. I skied a lot, did not ride outside very much. If it wasn't good ski conditions, I rode my Peloton.
Oh, wow.
I did lift, and I've been kind of off the wagon
Oh,
a
I was
bit,
going
but
to follow you up on that.
in
You said,
fact,
keep
my
me
daughter,
accountable.
who's
Go ahead.
trying to take a nap in the other room and probably is, well, she's going to try to sneak me into the gym later this afternoon. So I actually have kind of been trying to be somewhat diligent about lifting heavy things. I wouldn't say as great as necessary, but better than otherwise.
Are you enjoying it? I mean, do you feel any benefit of it? That's a big pregnant pause.
No. I am like, I'm just gonna tell you, I'm a terrible at, I'm like the worst student at, I'm worth the, no, you know what? I will tell you that's not true.
Okay.
I am enjoying it. I actually am kind of eager to go and lift today. No, it's not a bad thing. I'm always excited once I get there too. I just have a harder time motivating for it.
I understand
But
that.
yeah.
I do. I like it's not my first choice, but do you feel any, was that big no also that you're not feeling any benefits? Does it make you feel anything? Do you feel anything?
It's really hard. It's hard to say. The one thing I actually, so I don't know if this is something, so in the cycling world, or at least my coach had told me, and I've seen other cyclists doing this, like doing lots of leg presses and the benefits of almost like leg presses to exhaustion. And what I did notice with that is that some, I had actually, I have a partially torn ACL that I haven't had surgery on or anything like that. And what I've noticed is that when I do that, it actually does, it helps a ton with the pain and with stabilizing. So yeah, so I actually think there's benefits there. Just activating glutes, all of that. So yeah, no, I'm going to continue to, you know, want to do it and make an effort to do it. So yeah.
That's what I feel like when I definitely feel the power. I'll tell you when I'm mountain biking, I can feel the difference. When I get away from like lifting, especially deadlifting and lower body heavy stuff, period, at least once a week, you know, I take the it's slide, I do a very summer slide where it's too nice. It's just too nice. I can't get myself in. And by the end of August, September, I'm like, oh, I can definitely feel like, and it's just a couple of sessions and I feel the power return. That's, yeah, it doesn't take that much. But the bigger thing for me too is like any little niggles, I don't get the niggles the same way. It definitely does help with the activation and stability. So, yeah.
All right. You can keep me honest even
All
after
right.
we're
No,
done talking for this
I'll just keep
podcast.
texting you.
Please.
Yeah, that's cool. So last I saw, and I really want to hear about this, is that you were riding up a volcano, which is actually sort of one of my bucket list things. Tell me about how that came to be and like what that experience was like.
So it all was kind of last minute. I was going over to the Big Island with a friend, and then another friend, Betsy Walsh, you know her as well, was going to be in Maui. And so I flew over there, and you know, we rode Haleakala. It was so cool. You ride from sea level past
Did you
10,000
get
feet.
permits that day? Like,
You
I know
don't need a
it.
permit.
Oh, you
It's
don't.
all paved. It's amazing. And
Oh,
honestly,
I
I've
thought
had
you
my
needed a national park kind of a deal to get in there, but
no,
you don't need
no.
anything.
You just ride up the road.
Oh, okay.
And you do need a park pass in theory when you go through the gate, but you can just buy a day pass. It's not a
Gotcha.
big
That's what
deal.
I
And
was thinking.
actually,
Okay.
I mean,
I get
nobody was
it.
even at the gate.
Right. I've been
But
there when there's
yeah,
nobody
you
at the
don't
gate.
need to
Yeah.
like apply ahead of time. It's Probably, I could not believe how easy it felt, to be honest. 10,000 feet of climbing, it did not feel hard.
Doesn't it
The
get moon
descent,
dusty at the top?
no, it's all paved.
Is that the other
So
side or is that the another
you
hill?
might be thinking of Mauna Kea. So Mauna
That's it.
Kea, okay,
That's
so
it.
I kind of know this because I did think it would be fun to try to get QOMs on all three mountains at some point. So on the Big Island, you have two mountains right next to each other, Mauna Kea, Mauna Loa. I rode the backside of Mauna Loa, and that was awesome. That was very last minute. I was on a gravel bike with 45s. I did get the QOM on that segment, but I just don't think it's very highly trafficked. Mauna Kea is a little bit more of an ordeal. That's 13,000 feet, and the last few miles of that are gravel and not no joke gravel.
Yeah, I
So
was conflating the two. I was like, that
some
sounds like you're
people
making it
change.
sound much easier.
Oh yeah. I think that's and I entertained the idea of doing it on this trip and decided that was silly since I have not been riding my bike very much. And if I did it, I kind of want to do it right. But yeah, Mauna Kea, it's all road, and then the last few miles are chunky gravel, like that loose kind of volcanic. Yeah, it's
Ash.
hard.
Some people
Yes.
get on mountain bikes, I
Like
think
people
you're
have
going
to
to
get off
say.
their
Yeah,
bikes,
they.
I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah. But then over in Maui is Haleakala. And that was one of my favorite rides ever,
Oh,
actually.
wow.
Yeah,
Oh, that's
it was
cool.
really cool. Yeah. So if let me know if you want to do it. I'd love an excuse to go back very
Oh,
soon.
I it is
Yeah.
high on my list. Oh, when I was
Yeah.
over there in Kona, if I went snorkeling with manta rays, but if I had had
Oh,
another, oh, which I very much recommend too, but if I had another day, I definitely would have gone and done that because that's always been
Yeah.
high on my list.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, for sure. It's cool. It's what's
Did,
crazy.
yeah. What you
You
were
look
gonna
at,
say? What's crazy?
oh, you look at those mountains though, and they don't look that high. If someone just dropped you out of a bucket or like an airplane
Yeah.
and you looked up, you'd say, those are 3,000 feet. There's no way that's
Yep.
13,000 feet.
Yep.
So,
I have the same reaction to it. It's like, really? Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, it's maybe it's because the ocean is so big. I don't know. I don't know why they look
yeah,
that
I
way.
don't either.
Proportion. But
Yeah.
did it, I've had a and you can talk as much or a little about this as you want, but I have a sense like that your mojo maybe for the Grand Prix is not or was not where it was. Did it ignite a spark at all going and doing this or how are you
It
feeling
did.
going in? I
I
mean,
you know
we're
what? I'll
coming into the
be
Grand Prix, so
totally
how are
honest
we?
with you.
Okay.
I was thinking about withdrawing from the Grand Prix as recently as a few weeks ago. And because I haven't had the mojo, but what I realize is I haven't had the mojo because of Instagram and watching the people in the Grand Prix who have been talking about their training camps that they've been doing since November and their
Yeah.
training and their races. And I haven't done a lot of that. And so I had a feeling like, whoa, I was comparing myself. And we all know how dangerous that can be. I was comparing myself with them and starting to think that I had no business doing it and that I was taking a spot from somebody else who might have been super jazzed. And I talked to some people, including people at the Grand Prix, and they actually said, you know, take it race by race. You earned your spot. And they were very cool about it because I am definitely not ready to race Sea Otter. I will tell everybody that I
This will come
don't
out
even
after
know.
Seattle, so we'll
I
see.
am borrowing a mountain bike for it because the mountain bike I own is not suitable for racing. I am in no shape. I have not done any workouts per se. And I've ridden a mountain bike once last week for an hour because all my other bikes had flat tires, basically.
Fine,
Or dead
El
batteries.
Fuego. It's not hot.
I don't
No, it's
even
not
care.
hot.
I'll tell the world about this. So I'm looking at Sea Otter. Honestly, it's just like a fun experience. I'm going to ride with Yuri
Oh,
from
cool.
Petaluma down to Monterey.
Oh, nice.
I'm excited to go to some of the events around the Grand Prix. I know a lot of people like don't love going to Sea Otter sometimes because it can be such a circus. I want to go to Sea Otter. I'm going for all social reasons, and I will
Yeah.
ride the race on Friday. That is the Grand Prix race with zero expectations, except that it's going to be a good training ride. I know it's going to be scary at the start when a lot of the top competitors are on their trainers going crazy and the gun goes off and it is so fast. It's
It's
awful. And you
ridiculous.
know, I'm not going to hit the whole shot at all. And I'm going to be probably stacked up behind 30 people. And it's a very long race. And I'm just going to, I honestly, what I decided, by the way, backing up about the Grand Prix, I kept thinking I needed to have a why. You know, everyone, they say you have to have a why. And I've always been a believer in that. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to win. I'm not going to, I mean, that's a terrible, let's just be realistic. I'm not going to win the Grand Prix. And you know, I don't know. I don't have a certain race that I'm targeting. I have zero why. But then I realized, and this might sound cheesy, but I was just like, my why is why not? That's what I've decided. I
Oh,
don't
it's
really
such a
have
good
a reason.
attitude to go in with.
So
That's
that's
such a
what
good
I'm
attitude to go in
thinking.
with.
And if I want to be like, even if I want to get deep about it, it's like my body is still okay, even if I'm not in top shape right now here in the beginning of April. And I can make it work logistically. I have really lucky with my work situation, and the people I work with are very supportive. And so I'm just doing that. That's my plan.
I love it. I love that so much because I think that sets you up for success all the way around. Like I
Thank
really
you.
do. I do.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about that. I think that that is a great attitude to go into it with, and it takes a lot of the unproductive pressure off the situation. And
Yes.
you know, like who knows? And that's so great to go into Seattle that way because of all the things you say. Like, Seattle is nothing but a stress bubble because it's like so social and you're on your feet and it's hot and it's weird and you're just like, oh, I've got to do this big race and there's no
Yes.
air in those canyons and it's going to be, and that start is so bananas. But if you have such a good attitude about it, that yeah, it's, I
Thanks. I
love
will probably get my most riding in the next week or so, by the
it.
way. I am going to be probably so smoked going into Seattle, but that's actually it. I'm taking the pressure off.
Yeah.
Actually super excited to do this ride with a group of people, you know, for a couple days into the event. It's taken on a new meaning, which is just like, let's have fun on bikes and let me celebrate all these awesome people I've met because of bikes. So, you included.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's really exciting. Will I see you at Unbound? Because I will be
That's my plan. I've
All
got my
right.
tickets booked.
We're
I've
taking
got
it one at a time.
logistics worked out. I actually, yeah, I had even canceled my tickets. I rebooked them.
Oh,
No, I'm planning to be at Unbound. Yes, it's the my daughter graduates like 3 days before that here at Princeton, and then I will fly directly from here to Kansas. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. And
excellent.
I'm
Well,
excited to see
I'm,
you there. Are you
yeah,
going to
no, I'm
ride? Are you
excited.
racing?
I will never do the 200 ever again in my entire life, but I will do
Okay.
the 100.
Okay.
I just don't, I don't enjoy it enough, even type two, honestly.
Okay.
Like, you know, to do what you need to do to prepare for that and not suffer unduly. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I've done
Yeah.
enough 200-mile races, and it's my heart isn't in it. And I'm like, well, I would have no why. There's no why not. I know why not. I
Yeah.
just don't want to
It's true. I could probably come up with a lot of why nots for not to do
it.
how why not to do Unbound, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm stoked to go back and see everybody. It's been a while since I've been there, and you know, we're riding down to the event from Kansas City, so that'll be
Oh,
fun.
cool.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a good time. So I'll
Yeah.
see you there, and I'm really stoked. I'm very happy that you decided to stay in and that
Thank you.
you've got this why not attitude. And we'll good luck. You know, have fun at Seattle. Have fun at
Thank
Seattle.
you.
You're
Thanks.
welcome. Well, that's our show. Come on back next week when I have a fascinating discussion with Haley Kava, who is a pelvic floor physical therapist who also practices postural restoration, which, if you read Peter Attia's book Outlive, you know he credits that with helping him correct his own movement patterns and resolve some pain. We talk about her work in the context of resolving common pelvic floor issues that active women have. And I found the whole thing really pretty fascinating. So come on back for that one. And until then, as always, stay feisty. You've been listening to Hit Play, Not Pause, a feisty menopause podcast for active, performance-minded women. I'm your host, Celine Yeager. The show is edited and produced by the strong, talented, and amazing women at Live Feisty Media. Follow us on social media at Feisty Menopause. And please help us spread the word. Screenshot and share this episode on your social media channels with the tag at Feisty Menopause. Share the show with your friends. And please subscribe, like, review, and rate this show wherever you get your podcasts. Word of mouth and good reviews make it easier for other listeners to find. Thanks for listening, and as always, stay feisty.